This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leading toward the sun. I turn to you, 'cause you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome. I'm Michelle Barber and you are listening to Stand Up Straight, where we aim to provide a vehicle for the straight and allied supporters to stand up for our GLBTI community, to encourage and create greater inclusion, share stories, give advice, create dialogue, or introduce a new way of thinking. But most importantly, we want to facilitate change towards greater acceptance of our rainbow family in all its shapes and sizes. So tonight, please join me. I'd love to hear from you via SMS on 0427 joy949 or email on air at joy.org.au. I'm a little bit out of breath because I was actually singing and doing a bit of a dance in the studio. How unlike me. Tonight we are talking about a fairly serious topic, HIV and AIDS, and we're talking about the stigma attached to it and some stories. I'm joined by Meg and Dean, and they're going to be telling us, perhaps educating us a little bit. They're also going to be telling us a bit about their stories and hopefully answering some questions that we all need to know the answers to. So Meg and Dean, welcome.
Thanks, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks, Michelle. How are you today?
Good. I'm good, thank you. And don't be nervous. Trust me. Trust me. It's very painless. Now, there's a paragraph that I would like to read out, and I think this kind of sums up perhaps what you guys might want to address in a lot of detail, hopefully. HIV stigma remains the single most important barrier to public action. It helps make AIDS the silent killer, because people fear the social disgrace of talking about it or taking easily available precautions. Stigma is the chief reason why the AIDS epidemic continues to devastate societies around the world. Now, that is, I know that's a really, really heavy statement. Is that something that either of you or both of you would agree with? Have you felt that sort of stigma?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a really big part of the whole HIV situation. I'm extraordinarily lucky. I haven't experienced a huge amount of it myself, but I know many others who tell some pretty nasty stories.
Yes, stigma certainly has been a massive part of my story. Certainly when I was diagnosed almost 10 years ago, what I thought HIV was going to mean for me and what it has meant for me, by far the biggest effect HIV has had on my life has been the stigma that I've experienced.
You said 10 years ago. What did you think it was going to be?
Well, I mean, people don't really talk about HIV a lot anymore, but the idea that I had was back, do you remember the Grim Reaper commercials and all that? So when I was diagnosed, I had this idea that I was going to get very unwell very soon and, you know, Philadelphia, all those kind of ideas about, you know, being sick and, you know, having everyone look after me. And really, my health has better than it's ever been, and I take a couple of pills a day, but really every day I get reminded of being HIV positive and the stigma that comes along with that when you, things like, you know, dating or, you know, friends that find out and react badly, like it can really damage your confidence.
So badly, what would be an example? How do they react badly?
Well, I've got so many stories, but
it's okay. We've got a whole hour.
I mean, there are ones that really hurt, and there are ones that you know that come to mind. You know, even just when I think about my family and how well educated they are, and things like, you know, not wanting to share a Coke can for fear of, you know.
Does that happen still?
Well, it's funny actually. I was on a fishing trip with my dad. That's the thing that
fishing.
That's what we do. That's our our father son bonding experience. And I remember once that, you know, I went to hand him a can and he wouldn't want to drink out of it because he was fearful of what that, you know, of getting HIV, which is just ridiculous. But
is that naivety, ignorance? What would that have been, do you think?
I'm not sure. I imagine that his logic, you know, he knew that he wasn't, you know, that he wasn't in danger, but there's so much fear around HIV that he just didn't. And, you know, this happened, you know, soon after being diagnosed. So it's, you know, it's a long time ago, but it's those things where the people closest to you act like that. It can, you know, like I said, it's very hurtful. Yeah.
And when it's family, I'm assuming that it would be more hurtful. Does it also mean though that is it a bigger challenge to try and, I don't know what the right word is, I don't want to say win them over, but to educate them or to make them understand you, is that a bigger challenge if they're closer to you?
I guess it is. I mean, in one hand, you're trying to come to terms with it yourself, and on the other hand, you're trying to play this education role and you know, explain to them what it, you know, that I'm going to be okay, and you're really looking for support. But in the end, you end up supporting them. So
that's right. Yeah. So you're looking after yourself on one hand, mindful of how they're feeling, not wanting to upset them, not wanting to make them be fearful. You're both nodding.
Yeah,
you feel the same way.
Yeah, a lot of the time you have to look after people. You don't know how they're going to react. Sometimes they're angry, they get really sad, all sorts of different reactions. And every now and then someone reacts by saying, oh, what's the big deal?
Well,
yeah, and so it can be really hard actually trying to know how to pitch it when you tell someone because their reaction could be anywhere between absolutely going off the scale and saying, well, why is that a big issue?
That's an interesting word that you use, to pitch it. Is it almost like you've got to sell yourself? Do you feel that?
Well, it's a really difficult thing to do, to tell someone that you're HIV positive.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, if you had a terminal illness like cancer, or you had some, you know, you had a brain tumor, whatever, would you still feel the same way?
I don't think so, no.
Why? Why is there then? This is maybe rhetorical. His hand's up. See, I told you wouldn't be able to stop talking. Yay. Go, Dean. Your turn.
There's almost this inherent belief that because HIV is something preventable, that it's your own fault for becoming HIV positive, and that inherently links it to shame about the decisions that you've made. So, you know, if someone gets diagnosed with cancer, well then, hey, you know, that just happens and it's not their fault. But maybe even sometimes I blame myself for becoming HIV positive. So
do you blame yourself?
I think that a certain amount of responsibility comes down to the decisions that we make. I don't think anyone deserves to become HIV positive, but maybe when I was in my early 20s, I could have made better, you know, my late teens actually, I could have made better decisions and better protected myself, absolutely.
Mm. Meg, you were just about to say something.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I think it's all those things that Dean said, but it's also about sex.
Yeah.
And that makes it really complicated.
Why do you think that makes it more complicated, do you think?
it's something that we're not really good at talking about as a community, and we get a bit thingy about it, and it's everywhere and nowhere all at the same time.
You've got pearls of wisdom. We're only 10 minutes into the show. You're right, it's everywhere and nowhere. People don't want to talk about it, so then things are swept under the rug. There's ignorance is perpetuated, isn't it? So if you could talk... This might sound like an Oprah-type question, but if you could go back to yourself when you were 15, what would you want to say to your 15-year-old self then? You know now, obviously. I know, big question, Dean. What would you say? How would you do it differently?
Be vigilant all the time. But I think having self-respect is the main big thing that makes a difference. Knowing what you'll stand for and what you won't stand for, and sticking by it, I think.
Yeah.
Number one thing.
It's funny that you asked that question. It's something that I talk about. Obviously, I'm part of the Speakers Bureau, and I always talk about my motivations. And I imagine that if I had heard my story when I was 15, that maybe I would have made better decisions. But when I was growing up, I wanted to, you know, experience everything sort of yesterday and get out and with the party crowd. And it's a really tough one, but I think, like Meg said, you know, just really taking care of yourself and understanding that certainly in my situation, the gay community can be very fickle, and people are, you know, may not always be totally honest about their status. And that comes back down to... when we were talking about stigma about HIV, like I can understand why people may not be so forthcoming because of the stigma around that.
That one of the things that you've touched on, how do you and when do you disclose your status?
Yeah, that's one of the really
tough ones.
That
age-old one?
It's a really tough one. Mm. One of the first things that happened to me when I was first diagnosed is I had to go and see a nurse and have some blood taken, and thought, wow, this is the first time that I have to tell someone. You know, I have to tell this nurse. And so she encouraged me and she said, look, don't go telling people too fast.
Yeah.
This is something that you can sit on for a while and it can be yours. So that was really good advice, straight up, did. But there comes a point, I think, where the benefits of keeping quiet about it get outweighed by the problems of having to keep a secret. And so when I started telling people really openly a year or two after being infected, it was a really terrific thing to do, and I felt like I wasn't carrying around that big secret anymore.
It's
really positive.
It's that cliche, isn't it? That, you know, what do they say? A burden shared is a burden halved, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
my mother would probably be reminding
like
me. Yeah. So if you, how do you decide whether you tell someone or not? Is that too hard? I don't know if I'm being too personal or not.
No, not in the slightest. It can be a really hard decision to make. Like, who deserves to know? And I think it comes back to that question about the terminal illness. Who would you tell if you had any other kind of illness? And in some ways, it isn't anybody's business, unless there's a really good reason to tell a friend or someone who's important or someone in the workplace where it's important for some personal reason.
Can I ask either of you, you don't have to say where you work or anything, that's not relevant, but do they know in your workplaces at all, either of you?
The previous workplace that I worked before now, I told them, and it was because I was starting medication, and I thought, again, I had all these ideas about what medication was going to be like, and I thought I was going to have to take massive amounts of time off. But that's not how it turned out. And when I changed to my current job, I haven't needed to mention it, and it's never come up, and I don't see any reason for needing to tell them because, like I said, it doesn't affect my day-to-day life. So.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a bit the same. People know in my workplace, but I suspect and hope that half of them have forgotten about it. But I've been really lucky. Mostly I've found that people I've been employed by think that they get a bit of street cred out of employing a HIV-positive person.
Some brownie points or something. Yeah. It's an interesting way to put it. You're on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. I'm chatting with Meg and Dean. We have a song and come back and chat a little bit further.
Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
You are on Stand Up Straight with Michelle Meg and Dean. We are talking HIV and AIDS and the stories that they have and stigma that appears to be the most common thread that runs through everything that we've talked about so far tonight. Meg, there was just something I want to follow up on one of the questions we had we were discussing before. How do you, if it's not too personal a question, discuss your status with a potential partner?
That's a really tough one. Mm. That's the really hard one. Do you go with it on the first meeting when you first meet someone and give them the chance to run away, or do you wait until you've got to know each other a bit and it looks like, you know, something's going to come of it? It's really difficult. Maybe it might be different for me than the experience a lot of gay men, because what I'm interested in is building up a relationship over a long time, and not initiating a lot of short partnerships. Might be a different thing, but so I've tended to do it relatively early, mostly. So my current partner, I actually told him before we got together and became an item.
Have you been scared that they go running?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So would that be
absolutely
the main reason?
Absolutely. Scared stiff. Yeah.
But it doesn't stop you.
It's got to be done if it's going to happen. And I'm certainly not going to go. I wouldn't go to bed with someone without telling them about it. And so it's got to happen, and it's got to happen sort of well before that, because the last thing you want to happen is to kind of get really close to something exciting happening. So, oh, by the way, there's something we have to have a chat about.
And Dean, do you share a similar feeling?
Yeah, I've had sort of interesting experiences where it's been where they've, you know, been really great and sort of not really being too concerned about it, and then I've had other experiences where I've just been out for coffee with someone, and I just in conversation, generally what I will do is talk about, you know, friends I know who are HIV positive, mm-hmm. or the work that I do at Living Positive Victoria or the Speakers Bureau, and just sort of see how they react. But certainly I've had bad experiences where I've mentioned it and then never heard from the person ever again. So it can be tough, but I think the safest sort of road is to mention it before you are sort of in bed with the person, because then you can sort of, it can be potential for disaster and someone to react really badly.
Does it make you a stronger person? I know people, these are cliche questions, I know, but this is what I would want to know. Does it make you a stronger person because you're having to deal with these types of things? Does it make you a more well-rounded person? What does it? One shaking the head, but they're both different directions.
I find that it's incredibly hurtful, and it's, you know, getting rejected because of something like that that I've had to deal with is hurtful. I wouldn't say that it makes me more resilient, but it sort of eats away at you in a way.
It's still a strength, though, if you're becoming more resilient. I don't know.
Maybe. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. If you get a really good response from someone, a good reaction, that's a pretty good indication that they're an okay person.
What's an example of a good reaction, though? How do they responding that way?
Well, I've had some interesting ones. One guy came back immediately and he said to me, I come from Holland and we're a very liberal country, so that's fine with me.
It's like,
unfortunately, then he thought about it for a bit and said, how do you feel about that? Oh, okay, yeah. This reaction is okay. And my current partner, his reaction was great. He was concerned for me, wanted to hear about it, was concerned and wanted to know what that was like for me.
Do you see this as partly an opportunity for you to educate people as well? Obviously, you're part of the Speakers Bureau, so obviously you've got a mindset that you want to impart knowledge, dispel stigma, do whatever you can to give back to the community that we're all part of. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, certainly. Like I said before, it's always I always talk about my motivations for why I'm in the Speakers Bureau, and you know, I think back to myself before I was HIV positive, and if I had have met someone who told me that they were positive, I would have ran as well. So
really?
I think maybe that's a bit of bad karma coming back towards me. But No, because I was so scared and I was so uninformed. So I'm hoping that this has a, you know, we're able to educate the community and hopefully, you know, avoid people making the same mistakes. But also on the flip side of that, if they were to meet someone who's HIV positive, that they know that, you know, they're more informed about what that means for that person.
Why do you think people don't want to discuss it? Why do you, there's got to be a reason why. Is it lack of knowledge, fear? Is it all of those things? Is it that we don't talk about it enough?
Probably the Grim Reaper ads didn't help particularly.
Yeah.
But sex and death and drugs, it's a really heady mix and it's complicated.
Mm.
I agree with that as well, but I think it was a different time, and I think that those commercials at that time might have been the right response. They've certainly had a negative effect on what it means for us today, but yeah,
they had an immediate impact with getting numbers down, so that was really important. Mm. Yeah.
What sort of reactions have you had when you've been speaking? Have you had anybody that's reacted in a way that you hadn't anticipated, be it a good or a bad reaction in between? Like when you've been out, you speak to schools, I know, and some teenagers. Have you had some really unusual reactions or curly questions? He's smiling. There's obviously a yes in there.
The first talk that I did, just to get thrown in the deep end, was 189 students. So the questions that came out of the Year 9 boys, or came from the Year 9 boys rather, were amazing, and I don't know how they thought of these questions. I think maybe best not to repeat them on radio because they were quite explicit about sex and
if you're comfortable with some of the questions, I mean, it's, you know, this is the place for it. Go on, Dean. Go on.
Well, they wanted to
know. If you're comfortable.
They wanted to know. It was more about safe sex and specifics of what was safe and what wasn't safe and, you know, protection. But the boys were very sort of curious about what they could get away, not what they could get away with rather, but what they could do that was safe and wasn't safe. And it's funny though, because they were in a group of 180 kids and they were putting up their hands, asking questions in front of all of their peers. And I think there was a degree of wanting to show off in front of their mates.
Catch you out or something like that. But we're comfortable talking about it now. If they are, and they're starting to be comfortable talking about it in an open forum with 180 other kids, that's a good start then. Well, so how did you answer those questions? Were you comfortable?
Well, it was my first attempt and I was there with two other much more experienced speakers, so I let them handle the more tough questions. But I think maybe Meg's done a few more talks than me, so what? I'll pass it over.
Very well handled.
One of the side effects of being HIV positive for me has been learning to talk to very large rooms of complete strangers about my sex life.
Not many people could say that.
No. No, it's bizarre what you can say.
And did you have a similar situation, or have you, where you've had these really weird curly questions?
Yeah, I've had some odd ones, and sometimes quite personal, but usually questions aren't nearly as personal as people think they are. And so, you know, pretty much anything we're used to fielding these days. But yeah, it's the stuff about feelings, I think, more than sex and stuff that's actually the more difficult part of it. But for the most part, I find that people go really quiet and they want to hear the story because it's not something they have access to mostly. I kind of feel like it's a bit of a privilege to have a story that people are interested to hear.
I 100% agree. Do they talk about stigma at all, or do you guys raise that? Do you
that? Sure. It's something we often talk about when we give talks. Yeah.
We're going to go to a song in a minute, and when we come back with Meg and Dean, we're going to talk about stigma, how our allies can help you in your cause, how we can get some more dialogue going.
All day, every day. Joy 94.9 on air and online at joy.org.au.
Thank you, everyone, for staying with us today. I'm with Meg and Dean, and we're talking about HIV and AIDS and the stigma attached to it. And something I think I should have done at the beginning of the show is to ask what the difference – this is a dumb question – the difference between HIV and AIDS. Now, is there a difference? You're both looking at each other. Who's going to talk first?
Are you going to go with it?
Well, it's funny that we talk about this because this is a conversation that came up quite recently with a family member. And it came from a television show and on 60 Minutes or something. And I was speaking with that family member and they were saying something about they were going to... A young girl who had cancer, they were going to inject her with the AIDS virus.
Yes, we saw that. Yes.
Right. And yeah. I was like, you can't inject someone with the AIDS virus. That would, you know, if it was this modified version of HIV. Mm. And I was trying to explain this to this person. They didn't understand the difference between the two. So from... Just to give you everyone a brief overview, HIV is the virus, and then if it goes untreated, eventually you will become, your immune system will become compromised and lead to AIDS, which is a condition where your immune system can't fight off basic infection and that kind of thing. So again, when I thought about this, it was like, you know, if basic people that are close to me don't understand the difference, and this is sort of my job as a, you know, a public speaker to explain it, it comes down to, you know, basics of what we're talking about, stigma and people not understanding the difference of HIV and AIDS.
Do you think if people knew that definition, perhaps the stigma would perhaps not be the same or as big, do you think?
I think it would help. I mean, very few people in Australia who have HIV, particularly those who've been who've got it recently, for whom it's a new thing, will ever go on to have AIDS because our treatment opportunities here are so good. So you can have HIV for 40, 50, however many years without ever getting an AIDS-defining illness.
Can I just ask, if you don't mind, what sort of medication, not necessarily the names of it, but are you on a lot of medication? I've no idea.
Yeah. I take 3 pills in the morning.
Mm, and that's it?
And that's it?
I take 2 pills at night and that's it. And the side effects are non-existent.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any side effects either, really. It's incredible.
Yeah. I had no idea. I don't even know what to say. I expected some big something else. Yeah, so there you go.
Well, I mean, when I was first diagnosed, it wasn't what I expected either. When I got the diagnosis, I thought, oh, here I am. I'm due for a life of really ill health. But even then, the GP said, look, it's not what you think. Things have changed and improved no end. And he had no idea how much things had changed and improved. So, scene is bright.
It comes back to then that full circle of how do we get the message out to people, allies, families, neighbours, friends, co-workers, how do we get them to understand what the stigma is and why it's so, so debilitating to people that are HIV positive? Yeah. So what do we do?
I think the work that we do with the Speakers Bureau is incredibly important in the community, and we speak to a lot of different people. We speak to schools, we speak to health professionals, the police. So that really helps. And there's also a new program starting where senior speakers are going to go out and be talking to sort of aged care facilities. Obviously, with our aging HIV community, that's going to be super important. And that is probably the biggest program that I know of that helps break down stigma and misinformation. So I find that the work that we do really helps.
Mm. But
I'm just going to talk also about Living Positive Victoria's program at the moment called the Enough Campaign, which you've probably heard of. And Enough is spelled E-N-U-F. Yes. And so we've had enough, basically. And enough of stigma and a whole heap of associated stuff. So it's an opportunity for a lot of people to tell their stories and become real people I guess it's a bit like refugees. If you turn people into numbers and make them not real people, then it's easy to believe all sorts of stories.
And easily forgotten.
Mm-hmm. And similarly, if people with HIV become real people, then you can't write them off. They're normal people just like everyone else. Mm.
So there's a lot of misconceptions out there, obviously, isn't there?
Yeah.
And how do we define stigma? So for one person, is stigma something different to somebody else? It depends on how you're reacted to, how you're received by people. Would it also depend on how you present yourself as well as to how people react? Would that be right?
Yeah, I think lots of people have really different experiences of stigma, like people who've told me stories about in the workplace being forced to go and sit in a desk in a back room so that they didn't have to sit anywhere near anybody else from fear and whatever reason, those kinds of experiences.
So what happens if you hear... Okay, so someone goes to work tomorrow and they hear something or see something, what do we do? Can we break it down to words that we should or shouldn't use? Can we do that? I don't know.
Well, we can make friends with people, but we can also know what legal rights there are and what we're entitled to and what kind of grounds it's possible to discriminate and on what grounds it's not.
And on a softly tack, how would we do that? You know, if you've got family members that you don't want to offend, or you want to educate at the same time. So how do we get the message to them that you can be okay? Things will be okay, but this is not acceptable language or terminology or whatever. Do you know where I'm going? You know.
It's a tough one. Like, you want to take their feelings into account as well, and you certainly don't want to offend them when they're, you know, trying to do the right thing. So it's certainly a challenge, but I've found the best approach is to just sort of, you know, sit down with them and go through exactly what it is they're saying and how they're misinformed and, you know, try my best not to get upset or emotional about it, but it can be tricky.
And let them know that it will be all right and it's not the horrible, horrible end that we all saw 10 years ago and 12 years ago. Yeah, that'd be right. Something, did you have before you were HIV positive, both of you, did you have an understanding of or an opinion of the virus, the illness, the condition beforehand? Was it different to, had you heard of it? Did you know anything about it?
My entire information was basically the Grim Reaper commercials, and that's what I thought it meant for me. So when I was diagnosed, I was 19. I didn't know anyone else who was HIV positive, and I was absolutely terrified of what that meant. So it took me quite a while to understand and get educated myself. It was certainly difficult, but I think that, like, now, like, let's just say I was to be diagnosed tomorrow, it would be quite different because I know a lot more people and I certainly know a lot more about it. So back then it was quite hard.
Was there a lot of support around for you at that time, resources, or there wasn't websites, I don't think, then, on the internet? Or there wasn't?
There was the internet 10 years ago. There was. The internet started in 1980.
Okay,
so.
Thank you, Mr. Tech. Sorry, everyone knows technology is not my thing. We're finally laughing. It's taken us 40 minutes. What resources or what support did you have then?
I started by doing a peer support group at the Positive Living Centre and sort of just meeting people in the same situation. And then I got information from GPs and specialists to get a bit of an idea. But I remember when I was first diagnosed, and I remember, like, having this feeling that the doctor was lying to me, because he was so sort of unconcerned. He was like, oh, no, you're going to be fine, whatever, see you later, next patient kind of thing. And
really?
I guess, you know, being a doctor who's dealing with that every day, you become, you know, aware of everything that's going on, and you know your patient's going to be okay. But I was quite young and I didn't know that. So, and I remember thinking, he's lying to me just so that I don't go and do something silly. But, you know, obviously after a few years, I sort of begun to accept, or, you know, just get educated myself, and I realized that, you know, this really wasn't going to impact my health. But again, the main theme tonight has been stigma, and that's really where it's come to, you know, affect my, you know, confidence. And
in a sense, is that been the bigger hurdle, the stigma, rather than the anything else?
Absolutely. They're not even comparable. Like, being HIV positive is one thing, but the stigma around it has affected me tenfold than whatever. It won't even come close to HIV in terms of what's done to my confidence and ability, you know. And slowly things are getting better by far, but initially it was an incredible challenge.
So that's actually surprised me that it would be. I've gathered that it is, the stigma is the big challenge.
Yeah.
But would you say, Meg, is that the
same? I've been thinking about this recently, and in some ways it might be less for me as a straight woman, because no one would expect HIV to be part of my life. I look healthy and I'm educated,
so,
and, you know,
you look,
absolutely, so absolutely. And, no question.
Makeup does wonders, doesn't it?
And I think there's been something about being part of a girl that just no one anticipates it to be part of your world. And so it's, in some ways, I'm invisible. So in one hand, stigma doesn't affect me all that much, but on the other hand, it's not a secret, but it's something you don't talk about. So that element of stigma is always there.
You've still got the same thought process, do I or don't I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that I think, would it be correct in saying that you have to come out?
Would that be right? Yeah, I think that's right.
Isn't that an interesting turn of phrase that you've both had to come out for different reasons as well, obviously. But it is a coming out, so there's that same fear of rejection, acceptance.
Absolutely.
All of that.
Absolutely. Precisely both, the same thing.
Yeah. You're both shaking the heads vigorously. So is there one thing that we could, if you had to walk out, we walked out the studio today, what would be this one thing that you could tell people that you would want them to say from now on, moving forward? Is there something that you would want them to say? Or do?
One thing I think it would be great if people did was that if everyone took responsibility for knowing their status, for knowing whether
they're... Can you define that a bit more? What do you mean?
To know whether they're positive or negative and to take responsibility and care.
Which means?
Around that.
Testing?
Which means getting tested regularly. Obviously having safe sex so that you don't become positive, but being tested and knowing what your status is so that if you have the virus, you don't pass it on.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's such a great point, Meg. I've been, you know, like I said, positive for 10 years now, and I've never met anybody who's intentionally gone out there to harm other people. But I think the people that are passing on HIV are those people that sort of have their head in the sand and that and don't want to know whether they're positive or negative. Again, we bring it back to stigma because of the stigma around that. They don't want to know if they're positive or not. And this is where our numbers keep rising in terms of HIV infections. So, I think that if we were able to break the stigma down and have better reactions when people were either told that they were, you know, if you were sharing that you were positive, I think people would be less frightened of going and getting tested.
Getting tested can be pretty scary, but it's getting easier these days. We have the first rapid testing has been introduced into Melbourne, so you can do it really quickly
and
now.
Half an hour. I know.
Yeah, you go in, have a test, you know within half an hour.
No excuse.
Absolutely.
Zero excuses.
No, really easy to deal with.
Yep. Maybe I should go and see what it's like. Maybe I should go and have the
maybe,
test. And
maybe
see.
We all should.
We well, maybe we all should. Yes, let's all.
Yeah, we could all head down and get a test.
Joy 94.9 on Stand Up Straight. We're going to come back, wrap up. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Did you beep that out? The word sex. I hope so.
Parents in the room. Parents in the room.
I wanted to shock my mother.
Oh, he's getting all hot and flustered. I hope Grandma's not listening.
Oh, Grandma.
Stand up straight on Joy 94.9.
Hi, everyone. We're going to rush through this last bit of time that we've got left, and I really wish, I say it all the time, we had another hour. We have had a couple of messages. Dean's got a fan base already. He's had a couple of texts through. His mum said he's sent a text saying he's doing a wonderful job, and a friend Daniel has texted in support. We've also had a message from somebody, and I would like to read it out. Thank you, Meg and Dean, for your honesty and openness tonight. I cannot believe it's 10 years plus that I have known Dean. I have watched him grow from a young lad into a striking man. He is an inspiration to young, positive men and someone the GLBTI community should be very proud of. HIV stigma has meant we have far too young men like Dean prepared to tell the truth. Thanks for tonight's show. That is from another amazing man called Dean as well. Dean Beck is the first HIV negative ambassador for the Enough campaign and a man that does more for our community, and I say our community, than probably a lot of other people do. So that's a big statement. So
quite humbling, and I'd like to thank Dean for that. That's incredible.
I would also. I'm thrown by that, and I really do apologise.
Where do we go now?
Yeah, okay. Out for a drink. Responsible drinking, responsible drinking. I know I was supposed to say that. I learnt that in my training. sorry. There was one question. Do you think people in general believe that it's no longer an issue, HIV and AIDS? It's no longer a serious problem, that it's going away, there's less people infected, nothing to worry about anymore? Do you think there's that kind of mood out there, general public?
Yeah, I think that's there to an extent. And I think it becomes a really complicated message that we need to send, so that on the one hand, getting HIV, being HIV positive now is not the experience that it was years ago, and healthcare is great and that really makes an enormous difference. But at the same time, it's really important to say you don't want to get HIV. Mm. And it's really important to protect yourself, because stigma and the rest of the whole thing that goes along with it, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Mm.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And I think especially in the younger gay community, there's this mentality that, you know, they see people and I can just take a couple of pills and it's no big deal, and they don't necessarily protect themselves. So it's funny because we've been talking about stigma on one hand and how terrible that can be, and then we are looking at this other group of people, and, you know, if we look at the numbers, HIV infections have steadily increased over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a large number of people who aren't protecting themselves.
Why is that? Does it just come back down to not protecting? Is that what it is?
I think that, you know, when we look at the stigma around it, there's that, you know, that group that necessarily aren't too worried about it and think if I become HIV positive, it's not going to really mean very much. So I absolutely think that it's people, you know, taking risks or going out and partying and not being too worried about their well-being. And, you know, there's so many other consequences around becoming HIV positive, like the stigma and, you know, and medications. Being on medications for the rest of your life isn't something isn't pleasant to do either. So
I wonder if there'd be a need for another ad campaign or something. I mean, I don't know. Would there be?
It's interesting how silent it's become as an issue here. I know people who've come from South Africa, for example, and they say, we've come to Australia, no one talks about HIV. What's going on? Why is that?
Yeah.
So the Enough campaign is one way of addressing that head
just
on.
Just on that, people can go to the Enough website, which is www.enough.org.au, and there's actually a pledge that people can make, and I'm just going to read out a couple of things. It says, I pledge to challenge HIV stigma whenever and wherever I see it. This is what we talked about. I will take action when I see others gossiping about it, rejecting and or promoting negative stereotypes about people living with HIV. I commit to being part of the solution and not part of the problem. So I urge people to go and have a look at that website. Also to livingpositivevictoria.org.au. We're running out of time. There's my music. I want to thank my beautiful guests, Courage, and I really appreciate you both for coming in, Meg and Dean. Thank you so much. I promise I will have you back again.
That'd be great.
I want to thank Jerry on the front desk, Matt, my noisemaker.
Whoop, whoop.
There's some noise. And leaving you guys with your weekly challenge. I know you hate this, but this is your bloody homework. Get out there. What will you do this week to stimulate dialogue, create change, or encourage involvement? Let me know via social media. Even on Twitter, we're going to have all 12 podcasts up by the end of the week. Woohoo! And up next is Sonia with Sci-Fi and Scream. Thank you so much. This is a very, very, very important program tonight. I hope we've helped you guys get out there and start talking. You're on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Good night.
Take
take a look at our Stand Up Straight page on the Joy website. Head to joy.org.au, click on the program grid and select Stand Up Straight for our blog and podcast. Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.